I'm Bruce Edwards, and welcome to this podcast produced by the International Monetary Fund. The confluence of globalization and increased travel security has given rise to a flourishing industry where residency and citizenship can be acquired by those with means.
The scheme in Portugal is you have to buy a property that has a value of about €500,000. And with that, you get a residence visa where you have to reside 7 days a year.
Judith Gold is a deputy division chief in the Western Hemisphere Department at the IMF and co-author of an article entitled A Passport of Convenience, published in the December 2015 issue of Finance and Development magazine. Gold and her co-author, IMF economist Ahmed El Ashram, explain the economics behind this thriving business.
Well, basically, it's headed by large international law firms that advise wealthy clients on their asset management. And in that context, they also advise them on how they can acquire different passports for their families and for themselves, for estate planning and for other reasons. And so that's the market itself. And this just started to really balloon since the financial crisis, in part because there was a very rapid increase in wealth in emerging markets. So the clientele was there. But we also think the service providers saw this opportunity and started to market the product, first by advising governments how they can make their laws more friendly towards this type of investor, and then marketing, bringing the clients to the countries to show that this is doable.
And Ahmed, has the mobility, do you think, the ability to move from country to country become so difficult with all the extra security in recent years that there are people now willing to invest some of their money in countries that will, in return, give them greater freedom of movement?
I would say that in recent years, and we make this reference in our paper, since 9/11, a lot of things have changed, and there have been more travel restrictions and more scrutiny as well. And nationals from countries that do not enjoy as global mobility, or their passport that they're holding does not enjoy a lot of global mobility, do take the opportunity to invest in countries with the added incentive of being naturalized as citizens, and that gives them higher mobility to travel. Of course, high net worth individuals are interested in that kind of thing. Businessmen would like to fly to Europe without the hassle of going through visa processes.
I would kind of describe it in two ways. There's like there's a growth of a new middle class in emerging markets. These are very well-educated people with lots of assets. But when it comes to travel, they are treated like third-class citizens. And with the growth of wealth of these individuals, they're saying, I don't have to be treated this way. I can, for a relatively modest investment, I'll explain why modest in a second, I can actually acquire either a resident visa that will allow me access to all the Schengen countries, or a Caribbean passport that would also allow me access to all the European countries, plus 120-odd countries without any hassle.
So what kind of investment are we talking about?
Different programs have different kind of thresholds for investment and different type of investments as well. So I will use Portugal as an example, where the scheme in Portugal is you have to buy a property that has a value of about €500,000. And with that, you get a residence visa in Portugal where you have to reside 7 days a year.
7 days.
7 days a year.
The minimum residency requirement.
And many of these programs have extremely minimal residency requirements. The Caribbean programs are different. These are citizenship programs where you get a passport. The Caribbean countries, for the most part, do not have any residency requirement. the cost varies. The lowest is in Dominica, and you need to make an investment of $100,000 to the government. And then it increases in St. Kitts. It's the minimum investment is $250,000 to their development fund, and up to $400,000 for investment in real estate. The investment in real estate is attractive because you have the possibility to resell that within 5 years, but you still retain your citizenship and your passport.
Okay, so the revenues generated by these programs, are they significant enough to make a difference in a country's economy, you know, the economic growth of a country?
For small states, we believe they do. And we have seen that the very stark example is St. Kitts and Nevis, where we've seen inflows exceeding 25% of GDP. And when I say that, I'm talking about inflows both as contributions to the government and investments in real estate. So that's a very sizable figure.
So does it translate into jobs?
Yes. And Cyprus as well, by the way. The inflows are quite of significant magnitude and make a real difference in the construction and real estate and tourism sector, because a lot of these are end up being properties that are then for rent, like condominium rentals and timeshares and such.
So for the kind of inflows that go to the public sector directly contribute to the public sector investment, and that, of course, translates into jobs. It's adding to the room stock and these tourist destinations, these small states, and contributes to the tourism sector and the overall economy.
So I like how in your article you say that the benefits of these programs should be seen as a natural resource. But, you know, there's a lot of resource-rich countries out there that have extremely high poverty rates. How can we make sure that it's not only a select few that actually benefit from these programs?
This has been a very big concern of ours to begin with, in a sense. So the first thing we emphasize is they really need to improve the transparency and accounting of the inflows. So this really should be almost public information made available to parliaments on a regular basis of how many new passports are being issued, what were the revenues earned, how are they being spent. We do think that all countries should enshrine this in law to make the governments accountable for their activity in this sphere. Because without that kind of transparency, there are concerns for lack of governance and the money not being distributed or used appropriately. So that's the first step. The second step, once these resources are coming in and accounted for properly, then we propose very cautious fiscal strategies where they're saving them and developing sustainable investment programs that could benefit the country by investing in infrastructure, in training, these type of public investments. Where they have substantial resources, like in St. Kitts, where they've already saved close to 50% of GDP, both in the National Development Fund and on budget, we have proposed to them that they should establish a sovereign wealth fund so they can benefit from these resources over an extended period of time, hopefully even earning a return, which then obviously can contribute to their budget.
So I assume that there's security risks as well, because the traditional process of processing passports and visas is rigorous, and for a good reason. Does this not open the door to malevolence and corruption, perhaps?
These programs have a due diligence process, and indeed awareness that this risk is one of the factors that could bring the inflows to a quick stop is leading to a strengthening of this due diligence process. They hire international security firms to review applicants, and the industry now is in constant dialogue of how to strengthen these processes. Now, that doesn't mean that there isn't room for slippages, but everyone is very much aware that this is de-challenged. Now, at the end of the day, it's up to each individual country to manage that. And so that is where the concern is, because there are now many countries entering this arena, and it's not clear that everyone will apply the same standard of due diligence.
Ochman, you want to weigh in here?
Yeah, I just wanted to add that... Indeed, there has been like even a joint initiative by the Caribbean countries operating such programs to unify and standardize their due diligence process. The fact that it's being offered on economic grounds does not necessarily mean that the person acquiring the passport is not being properly screened.
What about taxes? What are the tax implications here? Are countries worried that they're not collecting taxes that are due to them because of these programs?
So I think estate planning is a big part of this. And I think the industry really did start in that sphere, because this was by law firms who are providing advice to wealthy clients on estate planning. And so that is part of the industry. You know, each country has its laws, but there is definitely tax competition. A lot of these sovereign countries are very low tax rate territories and such, and have very generous tax laws, per se, for residents.
The thing is that acquiring a citizenship through one of these programs does not allow you to escape your tax commitments in your place of residence. So I wouldn't say that the tax incentives would be the motivation. If you look where the demand is coming from, and again, we're saying, what's the story behind this industry? So the demand is, again, coming from emerging markets, coming from the Middle East. And so to a large extent, it's motivated by wanting another passport to fly on. Tax benefits, wealth management, estate planning play a part, but the story that we're seeing is that a large part of that has to do with mobility and global mobility.
Yeah, because there is a lot more instability in the world these days. And so the many emerging market clients, they perceive the risk, they have a lot of resources, so they feel they can do something to reduce the risk or to manage the risk. And so this is a safe haven in a sense that in case something does happen, they can quickly pick up and move.
That was Judith Gold and Ahmed El Ashram, both in the IMF's Western Hemisphere Department, talking about their article entitled A Passport of Convenience, published in the December 2015 issue of Finance and Development magazine. The magazine is available online at imf.org/FND, or you can download the Finance and Development app to read it on your mobile device. You can also hear more podcasts like this one at imf.org or soundcloud.com/imf-podcasts.